Captain Bert Bank witnessed some of the worst of the horrors. One day he was nearly decapitated by a soldier who wildly swung his sword from a passing truck. He saw the corpse of a man whose penis had been cut off and stuffed in his mouth. He watched in terror as an American lieutenant colonel, whom Bank had been holding up for hours, suddenly slipped from his grasp and dropped from exhaustion, only to be run through with a bayonet. He was forced at gunpoint to bury several Filipinos who had been severely wounded, but who were still alive. He saw their bodies twitch as he spread on the dirt. When a guard assaulted Bank with a metal club, fellow Americans carried him, semi-conscious and with a deep gash in his head, for 6 hours. It was a chaplain on the battlefields of Bataan, Father Cummings, who had coined the famous phrase, "There are no atheists in foxholes." Certainly the aphorism resonated with Bert Bank. He was not a particularly religious person, but nonetheless he found himself praying a great deal during the 5 days and five nights it took him to reach Camp O'Donnell. Although he was the son of Russian Jews who had somehow landed in the hard red hills of Alabama, Bank prayed not as a practitioner of Judaism, but as a supplicant to any deity or spirit who would listen. "You're not supposed to pray for results," Bank said, "but that's what I did. I didn't pray in any particular tradition. I just prayed for myself, for my friends. Prayed for the strength to make it through this. I was not angry at God. Who was I to second-guess God? But I was theologically confused. Why had I been spared? Why had my friends died? They were good people. They loved their families. They were honest and true. You ask these sorts of questions all the time, and you never get a satisfactory answer. God does strange things. But sometimes you can feel a presence. You can sense that this is all happening to teach us something about the nature of free will." By disposition, Bert Bank was a joker, someone unaccustomed to making hard assessments of the world. He was a garrulous man with a sharply pointed nose, keen eyes, and bushy black eyebrows that bounced with wild independence as he talked. He was the consummate Southern storyteller, an instigator, an imp, the kind of person who, as he put it, always liked to carry on a lot of foolishness. He spoke with the deep drawl and custardy lilt of West Central Alabama. He could strike up a conversation with anybody and instantly make a lasting connection. There was nothing dark about Bert Bank. He was all brightness and joviality. Even now, as despair closed in on him and his eyes drank in the unimaginable, he found a way to shut it off, isolating himself in an envelope of optimism, biding the hours in the warm trance of prayer. Bertram Bank had been raised in Searles, Alabama, a little mining town just outside of Tuscaloosa. His father ran a restaurant and then had a wholesale plumbing business, but he lost everything during the Depression. Somehow, Bert was able to save enough to go to college at the University of Alabama, where he was the business manager of the school paper and a close friend of Paul Bryant, who would later become the legendary football coach of the Crimson Tide. Bank received his commission in 1940, joined the 27th Bomb Group of the Army Air Corps, and received his orders for the Philippines in the fall of 1941. He arrived in Manila in late November, and after just 2 weeks, largely spent bar-hopping and catting around in the old walled city of Manila, he found to his dismay that the war was on. Since the Air Force was virtually destroyed in December, many members of Bank's 27th Bomb Group were given old Springfield rifles and put on the front lines as infantry troops. Bank became an S-2 regiment officer. "I was supposed to be doing intelligence work, determining where the enemy was," Bank recalled. "But that wasn't hard to figure out. The enemy was everywhere."